The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
Settles in your soul. Yes, it does. In fact, about, talking about selling in your soul, my partner's back. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Good, Wynn. Good trip, buddy?
Yeah, 5,000 miles in about 10 days, and we went through Texas. And guess what? They have freedom and liberty down there, and they don't give a damn. Seriously, they don't give a damn, y'all. It was awesome.
Also in the studio, we have, as soon as I turn his sound up, Supervisor Patrick Jones and his beautiful wife, Lori. How you two doing?
Very good. Thank you, guys.
Great.
Good. Great to have you on. We've got an exciting show today. At about 9:15, we have a certified polygraph examiner. His name is Kevin Legg, and he'll be calling in about 9:15. And we are broadcasting live from downtown Reading at KCNR 96.5 FM, where the music sounds better, and 1460 AM. We are also streaming live at KCNR1460.com, and we are archived and podcasted. And how you doing there, my good friend, the Hat Man?
We're doing good, guys. Thank you.
Hey, buddy, you okay? You kind of sound like Mr. Mo.
It's still the first hour of the day.
Oh, man.
Watching these two play with their headphones, too.
They are. They're switching headphones. You guys okay now? Can everybody hear?
I'm fine. These are good. Yep.
They good? Are yours good too?
Not really, but that's okay.
No, what color are you?
Red. It's maxed out.
Red is maxed out.
Interesting.
How about blue? How's that?
Got them on the right ears.
Anyway, we have a very interesting program today. I'm going to let Patrick sort of take this. He's going to take us down the road on what happened as far as some allegations that were made by people who said something didn't happen. However, we know that they did happen. So, Patrick, you want to take us down that road, brother?
Thanks, Terry. Thanks, Wynn. Thanks for having me on. So I am Patrick Jones, Shasta County Supervisor, District 4. And so recently, the Shasta Forward, this is the group that opposes the recall, and the three people on that is Supervisor Clemente, Supervisor Records, Supervisor Modi. And so when I was on Red, White, and Blueprint Episode 5, I made some comments, and so Shasta Forward then said my comments were not accurate, and that was a lie. And what I had said was that in 2007, we had a closed session meeting, and in that meeting, our city manager made a recommendation to keep Leonard Modi for one more year with a 20% pay increase, which is a spike in his salary. And they said that meeting never took place, nor could it ever. The problem was I was in that meeting, and so that's a little tricky there. And so I decided to take a polygraph test. So I've never taken a polygraph test. I didn't know any polygraph testers, so I just simply Googled polygraph services, and a gentleman's name popped up, a forensic polygraph service out of Bakersfield. I called him up, and he came out, and we set it up. And 9 o'clock on a Tuesday morning or so, we did the test, and I passed easily. Now I didn't know I would pass. I knew what the information was. I knew I was telling the truth, but I'd never taken a polygraph test, so I didn't know about your breathing and all these things hooked up to my hands and my chest, and so I didn't know. And I asked Mike Mangus from Channel 7 to be there and the Red, White, and Blueprint to print it or to film it. So I was, taking a chance. Obviously, if I failed, it would be right out in the open that I failed, and then the accusations from Shasta Forward would sound pretty true. But in this case, I did pass easily. And their accusations now are starting to sound like they're not true. Now, I also offered this to all people that were in that room in 2007, which was our city manager, Kurt Starman, our city attorney, Rick DuVernay, council member Stegall, council member Murray, and council member Bazzetti. Council member Dickerson has deceased. And so at that time, no one took up the offer, and so I simply took it myself. And it's still available to everyone that was in that room to see who's telling the truth. But really, to tell the story, we need to back up a little bit, a few months, half a year or so before that particular closed session meeting occurred. So I got elected. My first time elected was and sworn in on December 3rd, 2006. And then I started having meetings in January and February and March with department heads in the city and going over staff reports and doing all those things that council members do. But since you're new, you don't know all the rules and all those things, so you're learning as quick as you possibly can. But when I'd gotten through the police department, and I had, you know, biweekly, you know, I had every other week I had a meeting with city manager. And so I'd noticed that Chief Modi is eligible for retirement in 6 months. And I didn't know if he was going to retire or not, so I asked our city manager, is Chief Modi going to retire or not? And he goes, well, we just leave it up to Leonard. And I said, well, you don't know. I mean, you're just going to wait 6 months and then we could be out of a chief, and that doesn't sound good for the department. Certainly doesn't sound good for the city. And he goes, well, that's how we do it. Well, that wasn't making sense to me, so I knew we had three good captains, and any one of them would work well and have a good transition. So the next day, I called all three captains and asked them if he had any interest in being a chief. I said, I do not know if Leonard Modi is going to retire in 6 months, but he could, and I see no incentive why he would stay, so I would assume that he would leave. They were all very quiet, and they didn't want to really talk about it. They were all very nice and very much gentlemen, but they didn't want to talk about it. And so then the very next day, right after that, City Manager Starman is calling and yelling at me that you cannot talk to the captains. That is a personnel issue, and you cannot talk about that. And I said, you know, I'm new here. I've only been on the job for a few months, so I'm not familiar with all this. But what you're explaining to me is leaving the city vulnerable and the department in a bad position, possibly in 6 months. And I'm trying to head that off, and you're not explaining to me what you're doing is good for the department or the city. But I said, I'm new, so I'm going to back off. So I backed off. So roughly around 6 months later, and this was actually early September, and to be honest, in the last month or so, I couldn't remember if it was August or September, but it was early September. We had a closed session meeting. And as we go into closed session after the council meeting, so this was probably 8 or 9 o'clock at night, and it just simply says labor negotiations, so you're not sure of what it is. And so when I went into that meeting, you know, I had no knowledge of what it was about. And that's when our city manager, Kurt Starman, came to us and said, it's a really tough time in the city's history. We've had this sex scandal that has happened at City Hall, affected, you know, six or seven people were involved in that, and we need good leadership at the chief's position, and it is my recommendation that we keep Leonard for one more year. And I stopped him right at that point, and I said, that's good, Kurt. I said, you know, it just would have been nice to know 6 months ago, that's all. And he goes, well, with one caveat. And he held up one finger, and he said, with one caveat for a 20% pay increase. And that's when I got mad, because this was a form of spiking, and he put money above what's best for the city and what's best for the department. And I was pretty upset that a city manager would do that to us, to do that to me and to the entire council, to put us in a bad position to spike salary. And this had been a plague, still is, but it was really a plague going up and down California, spiking salaries, and it's really hurt CalPERS and the investment strategy by having all these spikes. And so the council took a vote. Now, I can't remember if it was a vote or a consensus, but either way, it was 5-0, and by law, they're the same. It was 5-0 to know and to let him go, and those were the words that were spoken. And so those are the things that we went over in the polygraph test, and that's exactly, for anyone else that's going to take it, those are the questions that will be asked, and then you'll have to answer those truthfully. That's what occurred in that meeting. The very next day, I get an email from Kurt Starman that Leonard Modi has been appointed on his authority to assistant city manager, the number two position. Now, he legally has the ability to do that. So I go back down.
Meaning Starman does.
Starman has the ability to do that. And it was, to be exact, it was the assistant city manager slash police chief. He has the ability to do that because the police chief position isn't paying any more than it was. The assistant city manager position is, and he has the authority to do it. But the night before, we said, let him go. And the entire council was, and myself, were expecting Leonard to go. And I find out that he's still there, and now he's in the number two position with a pay raise. So I go back down to City Hall, and then an argument ensues. And, I told Mr. Starman this was not the will of council. The council was clear as to what we had voted on, and we said let him go, and he's still here. He argued that he had the authority, and he's going to do it anyways, and we just have to agree to disagree. That was Kurt's always famous comments when you couldn't get past something. And so that's what occurred. And, and for everybody that was in that room, I'm asking you to be honest about it. You know, those are the facts. That's what happened. And people say, well, why are you bringing it up now? Well, I brought it up in episode 5 because a very similar thing, not exact, happened with Eric Magrini, a sheriff that got a vote of no confidence, two votes of no confidence, and then the CEO of the county puts him in the number two position.
Which they always do the same thing, don't they?
It was very similar, very similar. And
when you did ask these other people to come on that were in the meeting, they declined, and you did invite them to come in to do the lie detector test. And talking about that, we do have Kevin Legg on the line. How are you, sir?
I'm well, thank you. How are you guys doing today?
Doing great.
Good.
Before we go any further, I don't know if you heard about the first part. Patrick sort of laid out the what had happened that. And what led to the idea of him doing a lie detector test showing that he is telling the truth. And we have you on the line here right now. Can you give us a little bit about your background, a little bit about who you are, and then we'll just get into this subject matter.
Okay, sure. Yeah. So my name's Kevin Legg. I'm a retired robbery homicide detective with the Bakersfield Police Department, and in the cases that I work, maybe 20% of the cases I would bring in a polygraph examiner. And the examiner was able to get results that were deceptive. And through those results in that post-test interview, the examiner was able to get the location of evidence that was not yet known to the crime. So
about how many of those cases went to the polygraph? About how many did you have?
Probably 10. I probably sent 10 to a polygraph examiner. And out of those 10, over half resulted in the discovery of additional evidence.
Wow.
So it was a legitimate confession.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't manufactured, because it resulted in more evidence being discovered. So this looks like the real deal here. And you can't get a job anywhere in civil service, police officer, firefighter, without taking a polygraph examination. I mean, every county and city requires that, and the polygraph is real big in the federal government. It's used by the FBI, the CIA, Department of Defense, National Security. When I went to the Polygraph Academy and started to learn, the physiological responses, how it all operates, everything started to fall into play. It was pretty easy to understand. And it's basically what it boils down to is we're all created with defense mechanisms, and you have your fight, flight, or freeze condition. You know, if you're walking down the street, somebody jumps out from behind a car and they scare you. You know, you're either your body physiologically changes to prepare you for, a fight or a flight, running away, or you're so startled you can't move. Well, in polygraph, lying is a defense mechanism as well. It's up to us whether or not we choose to lie, but the question has to be hostile, threatening or some type of danger to you. For example, a guy's having an affair on his wife, and he's doing it. He's confronted by her. She asks him, you know, are you having an affair on me? Well, these physiological changes, for example, your cardiovascular activity, breathing patterns, Eklund sweat glands throughout the body become active, blood volume changes. These are physiological responses that the polygraph system measures and records with great accuracy. But you have this hostile question, you're going to have those physiological responses taking place in the body.
What's the percentage of accuracy on a lie detector test?
It's in the low 90s.
Okay.
93 to 96%.
Wow. Okay. And also, the questions are given ahead of time when you do a polygraph exam, aren't they? Aren't they given ahead of time? Okay. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah. It's like with Patrick and I, we interviewed before the test, you know, so I got a rundown as to what's going on. And then Patrick and I developed the questions for the test during this interview process. We practice the questions, practice the test before taking it, so the examinee has every opportunity to know the questions, to practice the test, so there's nothing that we haven't discussed that's asked.
Now, this is not admissible in court unless both parties agree, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and also... Now, let's say that somebody has been convicted of something, and let's say it's a sexual predator, something like that. Now, can the judge mandate that there is a polygraph test taken post-conviction?
Yes, there is. By law, there's a part of the terms and conditions of probation or parole is you have to submit to 2 polygraphs annually. So it's court mandated, so that they have to submit to the polygraph. You know, if somebody doesn't want to take a polygraph, I'm not going to make them take it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's obviously ramifications, you know, with parole or probation if you don't take it. So,
hey, Kevin, question. If you're given the option, you know, you just said a moment ago both parties have to agree to have it admissible in court. Is that prior to the test given or after the results are known?
Usually it's after the test is given.
But are the results known? That's the question. I mean, it can be after the test is done, but they may not know what the results are. So that window there, that's what I'm asking.
Yeah.
No, they would definitely want to know the results and everything before they agree to, its admissibility.
Okay.
There's been some articles written here about credibility of not only Supervisor Jones, but the credibility of the test itself. Now, how long were you a detective?
Just about 15 years.
Wow. Okay. And you probably had hundreds and hundreds of cases. That's my, I would believe, yes?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay. And you have been a certified polygraph examiner for how long, sir?
Going on 4 years.
Oh, okay. Well, so, I wanted to establish that because there has been some articles written by the people who are proponents for keeping the supervisors about the legitimacy and also the integrity and whether or not someone can really lie on those tests.
So they're lying about the tester?
They're lying. Yeah, exactly.
Good Lord.
And so anyway, point being is that they're subject to scrutiny here because of the fact that they did call out Patrick Jones as being a pathological liar.
Apparently.
Okay. So, at least that's the
that's another consensus. That's one more new nickname I have.
One more new nickname. And so I guess in your professional opinion, isn't that kind of hard to do? And Patrick did pass that test, correct?
Yes, Patrick did. Yeah, he did. He sure did. You'll find that your proponents, the polygraph, usually are the ones that have something to hide. You know, they'll start to, it's not admissible in court, doesn't mean anything, blah, 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 blah. Well, why don't you take the polygraph? What are you hiding? You know, if you're being truthful, there's nothing to hide. You know,
right.
So that's been my experience. You know, those who badmouth it generally have something to hide.
Yeah, you know, I guess, you've got some extremely impressive credentials. And by the way, thank you for the public service.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that.
It's interesting how people can just sort of write whatever they want to write about you. And gee whiz, you know, it's kind of like, you know, what they've written about Patrick. So
Kevin, did you get interviewed by these people up here that are writing these stories?
No, I did not.
Yeah, and did you even speak to them?
No.
Oh, okay. I'm just trying to lay the groundwork for credibility for those people that are writing things.
Well, the idea
they haven't reached out.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
And Kevin, you know, I appreciate you coming up. I know you're from Kern County, and that's a ways. And so, did you know me before? I mean, I basically just Googled, and your name happened to come up.
Yeah, we were total strangers.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know you, and you know, I was a little nervous. I've never been polygraphed, so I didn't know, you know, if my breathing or this or that. I'm being tested, and. I also called Channel 7 to come over to film it live. So, I mean, if I fail, that's going to go out to the public quite quick.
Yeah,
so I had
everyone see you bet.
Yeah, so, I mean, I had a lot on the line if in fact, you know, I wasn't telling the truth. And, you know, they've recently said now that because I passed that I must be a pathological liar, which, again, I'm not really sure what that is, but... Have you ever met a real pathological liar, and could he pass a polygraph test, or she?
There are some mental illnesses that...
Are you saying I'm mentally ill?
well, you know, I didn't say that. No, but, for example, schizophrenics. They may go into an episode where they're talking to you 1 second, everything's just fine, and the next thing you know, they're holding a conversation with some imaginary person. Those people, you can't keep them focused. They're not in reality. We recommend not testing diagnosed schizophrenics. And then you've got, psychopaths, people with zero emotion. Zero remorse. You've got to watch them closely. But that's, you know, you develop all this information in your pre-test interview. You know.
Are you saying I'm not remorseful now?
But you know, it's countermeasures are something that people will do to try to manipulate the outcome of the test. And I watch closely what the person does. I make sure, you know, that you were told, you know, sit perfectly still, don't move. And I watch the person as I'm asking the questions, as we're doing the test. I look at the screen. I see the physiological responses happening, you know, real time right there on the screen. So I can detect things. So, if you start... alternating or manipulating your breathing, I'll see the changes in the breathing pattern on the screen. So you just pay attention to oddities, things that people may try to do to manipulate the outcome. And if you catch them, it's definitely not good.
Kevin, we have about a minute left. Can you give us a bit of a wrap up here, brother, before we let you go? Any final thoughts?
It's unfortunate, you know, that, you know, Patrick has to go through the stuff. You guys have to, you know, go through the stuff, and it's. I was glad I was able to, you know, help Patrick in clearing his name. There's no question in my mind that he did not pass the test. He did pass the test. He followed instructions, did as instructed. He did perfect. And, I'm sorry you guys have to go through this stuff, but, you know, it is what it is. But, it's, you did good.
Thank you for everything, sir. And we'd love to have you back on sometime. Is that okay?
Sure. You bet.
Great. Well, thank you, Kevin. Have a great day and enjoy your Sunday. So,
all right, Phillip, you guys take it easy.
Okay, brother. At this point, we're going to go off to our break. Time has come for 51. Let's get it done.
Amen.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere ag and turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all their property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Revolution has started.
Sovereign Minds, now on Sundays, 10 to noon.
Have you been putting off getting your colonoscopy due to COVID restrictions? Well, there's no better time than now. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, colorectal cancer screenings have declined by 86%, and as a result, up to 10,000 more deaths are projected over the next decade. With early detection, colon cancer has a 90% survival rate, and it may even be preventable with a colonoscopy. At Reading Endoscopy Center, our number one priority is the health and safety of our patients, and our center has always been committed to maintaining strict infection control and prevention protocols. Schedule your colonoscopy today by calling us at 530-246-7000 or visiting readingendoscopy.com. Visit readingendoscopy.com.
That depends on if it's real law. I mean, you know, yeah, you know, there are some laws that are legal that aren't lawful. That's why we fall back on a thing we call the Constitution. Anyway, I'm here with Patrick and Lori Jones, and excited to have them here. Supervisor Jones is he's one of those people who are actually a statesman rather than a politician. And when we do our podcast, which we do on Mountaintop Media, you can come on there. We can use colorful metaphors on there, too, by the way.
Oh, wonderful.
I know. Yes. We can have fun with those and use them all we want, as long as they're in good taste.
Excellent. You know. Excellent. I've tried to not use any profanity and in all of this. And
which can be difficult, can't it?
Well, you know, it's frustrating because you know, when you tell the truth and you take a chance to do a polygraph, and then you offer it to other people, and then everybody apparently has amnesia. this must be a side effect of COVID, I think, is amnesia. They haven't talked about that. But
And those are government services? Servers? Politicians?
Well, and another interesting thing on this particular case is that, you know, Leonard Modi wasn't in the room. So for him to comment on something where he wasn't privy to it.
That's true.
That's all hearsay. And but a polygraph for him would be helpful and useful if the correct questions were asked. Now, clearly, Kurt Starman knew from my questioning, you know, prior to the September 2007 closed session meeting, 6 months prior to that, I'd asked Kurt about Leonard Modi and his, you know, his position and whether he's going to stay or going to go. And so was he in communication with Leonard Modi? So did the city manager have talks with Leonard Modi to conspire, essentially, to spike that salary? And
can you explain spiking and how that works to folks who may not know what that means?
Right. So, you know, in the case for Leonard Modi in 2007, Kurt Starman comes to us and says, hey, I want to keep Leonard on for one more year, but a 20% pay increase, which he has to have council approval for. That's why there was a closed session meeting. He can't do it on his own.
But he can fire and hire on his own.
Correct. And he could extend the contract for a year on his own. He didn't need council approval for that. But to spike, mm-hmm. to increase the salary for 20% for 1 year. Now, why 1 year? Well, because then it gets calculated into your retirement, and that's the spiking. And, in fact, today I believe it might be illegal to do that, to spike CalPERS. I'd have to take a look and see either by policy or by law you can't spike your salary, which was happening a tremendous amount in the 2000s. Also keep in mind that in September of 2007, we're into the global recession. And so here he has the gall to try to spike his salary.
Wow.
When we're entering in a global recession, people are losing their jobs. We lost 300-400 positions at City Hall, and he's trying to spike his salary. People are losing their businesses, losing everything they've got, and yet he puts his own money above what's good for the city and the department.
Wow.
That's what's so upsetting about this. And then they're attacking me for being honest about it. And everyone in that room so far, with the exception of Rick DuVernay, which is his attorney, he has not weighed in, nor Dick Dickerson, because he is deceased. But everyone in that room so far has written letters to Shasta Forward saying otherwise, which means they've all lied, all of them. And so here's my recommendation. And so to you, Mary Stagel, it's time for you to take a polygraph test. Ken Murray, it's time for you. And I believe Ken has agreed to, so we're going to see that fairly soon. And then Rick Bozzetti and Kurt Starman, it's time for you two to take a polygraph and clear your name, because we're not going to let this go. We're going to hound you because you're not being honest, and you've criticized me for being honest, and I'm not going to take that, and we're not going to sit back. So the gloves come off on this one or any other one you want, because I'll take a polygraph anytime, any day.
Was there actual denial that this meeting never even happened?
Correct. Some of the comments received back was that this never happened.
Wow.
And so that can be a question, real simple.
By those people that were in the room?
That were in the room.
That wrote the letters?
Yes.
Okay, so aren't there public records of notes that you have to...
Not much in closed session, unfortunately.
Mm. But you broke into closed session.
Well, we go to closed session. It just says labor negotiations. And so nothing was reported out, even though that there was a 5-0 and that's a final, and it should have been reported out.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said this before. And I've constantly argued with the city manager in the past for not having things reported out, because it doesn't serve the public. The public is unaware of what's happening. So things are happening in closed sessions up and down California that are final decisions that should be reported out, but they are not. And so the public is unaware of it.
Right.
Now, the situation with Eric Magrini and the votes of no confidence, that information was out in the public, right? So they couldn't hide it anymore.
Yes.
And the CEO giving the position to him, to Eric Magrini, the number two position as assistant CEO, that was out in the open. And so everybody sees that, or at least most people see that as not appropriate. When you have votes of no confidence, and then all of a sudden you're in the number two position for a considerable pay raise, the public...
Could that spike his salary? Could that spike his retirement?
Absolutely.
It will. So, in other words, because the comment that Eric McGreeny made to me was that he wanted to stay in Shasta County. He had had job offers outside of Shasta County, but wanted to stay here because he still wanted to serve the public. But isn't he serving the public at, what, about a 40% pay increase?
Yeah, I think
so,
it's 194 or something like
oh
that.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so just in perspective, when you look at this, Eric McGreeny now has a new job that spikes or possibly spikes his retirement. I asked him what was wrong with the old salary he had. Why did he take a pay increase? And he sort of looked at me with a silly grin and sort of shrugged his shoulders. And it's sort of like, it's almost hard to believe as we peel back this onion how it looks so corrupt.
Yeah, and to the average person, you know, when you get a vote of no confidence, two votes of no confidence, and then all of a sudden you're promoted, if you will, across the street for a pay raise, how do you think the public and how do you think the department is going to feel about
right.
that? I mean, that's a real slap to the department that did the vote. They expect him to be gone and improvements made within the department.
And those staff members are not going to want to speak to the CEO or any of the board members that voted for that because they know that they don't have their back. And they're out there serving the public. They're on the line out there serving the public and trying to keep things under control as best they can for our county. And when they have a legitimate slap in the face like that, how else are they supposed to feel?
And, you know, with this polygraph, I'd never taken one before. I don't think I'm a pathological liar. And, I'm pretty sure I'm not. But I was impressed with what he was doing to the point that I was nervous. I mean, sitting on this electric thing and then getting plugged to this and stuff around your chest. And, you know, I was a little bit nervous. But it still read correctly because when you tell the truth will show, and it clearly showed that. And so I was impressed with the process and what the forensic polygraph test did. And so I would like to bring that up here routinely. And from a guy like Kevin or someone similar to that that's from many counties away that really doesn't have a dog in the hunt.
Yeah, right. And didn't know you prior to this.
Didn't know me or didn't know anybody.
Anybody.
And now Kevin's done work up and down, and I think he's been to Shasta County before, but I'd never heard of him before. But someone like him or certainly Kevin, where they bring their equipment up and test people on a regular basis, and let's film it and get it right out to the public.
I was very impressed with how professional – not he was amazingly professional, but you're right. I mean, you even had to sit on something. It's kind of
– Well, if the studio
– It's like,
you know,
man.
We need a little better studio. I mean, we had some flickering lights in there. And I mean, I think
that was for effect.
That was they have a power problem, I think there.
So did were the results known at the end of your polygraph right then and there, or did he have to go back?
Yes. No. So he's making calculations. He's writing things down. The computer is indicating stuff every time I have a question. So you have these test questions where he asks you a series of questions, and he wants you to lie to him. And so you're asked a question, and he wants you to lie to establish what your body is doing when you lie. And then you have a question that you need to answer correctly. And then you have another question that you need to lie to, and then you have another one that you need to answer correctly.
No, are those surprise questions, those particular questions?
No, no. We knew the issue. Was there a meeting in 2007 where Kurt Starman asked to keep Leonard on for one more year with a 20% pay increase? That's the question.
Yeah.
And either your body is going to respond to that correctly or not.
Okay.
And that's the questions are going to be asked to the others. It is the thing that they're saying didn't occur. And so it's a simple question. Now, what Kevin did is he did that a series of times to establish that I wasn't just doing it on a fluke one time.
He needed to establish a pattern so he could diagnose
right.
what – okay.
And then at the end, he made his observation, and he was quite clear that I'd passed the test. And I was relieved. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I've got the couple camera crews filming it and the local TV station.
It took about 2 hours for the process.
Yeah. You know, and so it was you know, he's pretty thorough, and he explained everything. He said, you know, you need to be honest. Do not move around. Don't be jittery. You know, and so, of course, when you tell people those things, what do you think you want to do, right?
You want to move around, you want to
move
be jittery.
Around, you want to be jittery. And he's telling you not do those things because it can affect
right.
The quality of the test. So I listened to what he said carefully and did what he asked. And then, you know, obviously was hopeful for a good outcome, and it did. I had no issues whatsoever with the content of the information. I knew was true,
mm-hmm.
absolutely true. I was there, And, you know, I went to 12 years worth of council meetings. I never missed a meeting. I was the only council member to have perfect attendance. I read every staff report for 12 straight years. I was elected for 8 of those years. I did my job. And I served the best way that I could with integrity. You know, I turned down the retirement. Mm-hmm. And I turned down the health care and the vision, the dental, all that stuff.
Because that's offered for life, right?
It was then in those years, yes.
You know, I found it interesting that Kevin said that you cleared your name. And to me, again, we go back to the Shasta Forward thing. We go back to the articles that were written, the association between Shasta Forward, News Cafe, et cetera.
Right.
And we look at all this stuff. And on both sides, with all the allegations made to the Shasta Group, the Shasta Recall Group, to Red, White, and Blueprint, that they've laundered money, that they've done illegal stuff, that they're being investigated. The only person that has been found guilty of anything is Leonard Mody. He was found guilty of misfeasance, and some would say malfeasance. Scuttlebutt has it that that was lowered, that the district attorney got involved. Don't know that for a fact. But we will find out that the scuttlebutt has it that it was lowered from malfeasance to misfeasance. But the abuse of power like that, and again, Eric Magrini is classic. The only thing he was really upset about, admitting the fact that he drove Mody back behind the car fire lines, admitting the fact that he went to help him turn in his generator. But Magrini was upset about the 2 bottles of wine that were rescued, It's hard to fathom this,
right.
But obviously someone with the credentials and the background and the credibility of Kevin.
And one of the things for the allegations against Leonard Mody that went to the grand jury, and people said, you know, how come, you know, it's just coming forward now? And the reality is that the person that had, you know, good firsthand knowledge of what was occurring, he didn't come forward early on, and he only did after he saw that I and Les Baugh was censured, and he was so upset at that that he decided that, you know, if you're going to censure somebody over for opening up a boardroom, maybe this is the time that we should look at Leonard Mody to see the activities that he did, and that's when he presented it to the grand jury.
Who's he?
His name was John Day. And he presented, he was a former council member.
Council member Anderson, yeah.
And he had the information, and he presented it to the grand jury. Now, the grand jury doesn't have to pick up this information. And most of the things, or many of the things that they receive, they don't have the time for, nor do they pick up due to lack of evidence or whatever. But in this case, they did, and they came with a conclusion. And unfortunately, it was what we all felt was a watered-down conclusion, which is unfortunately a plague with the grand jury. We want teeth in these things. We want to hold our elected officials accountable, and they're constantly getting things watered down from higher up positions, if you will. And I've argued this for many years in the council, that we had some serious problems here in Shasta County and the city of Redding, and the grand jury is not getting to a conclusion where people are prosecuted correctly.
You know, the thing that really strikes me is the fact that you've been doing the right thing. You're fiscally conservative. You've been there for the people. You've been telling the truth. You've been fighting.
I'm not conservative. Leonard Mody, Joe Clemente, 2 cops, and a rancher. You can't get more conservative than that, right? That's what I've heard.
Yeah, it seems like they have some good backers, mostly progressives. In fact, there's even some alleged ties to Black Lives Matter and to Antifa. But the question I want to get to is that I'm amazed on how it really hasn't affected you two. It's got to be. There has to be, Lori, there's got to be pressure that you feel from people lying about your husband. We all know what kind of man he is. And for lying about that and stuff, how have you handled that? And I know that you have a lot of background in legal and also business. How's that affected you?
Yeah, I have an interesting background. I have a double degree in law enforcement, so wildlife law enforcement and regular law enforcement, you might say. Interned with Fish and Game for several years, worked right with the regional director and lieutenants and the captains. I've also had clinical experience, medical background as well, and I also have legal gambling. I've been out in that arena too, so I have a multitude of areas that I've been around. So
I never play cards with her.
And I don't cheat. I beat him legitimately.
So no bluffing, huh?
No bluffing. But what I find, people don't see behind the scenes with Patrick. They don't hear a lot of these stories that are coming out now. So it can be frustrating on my side. When people start to hear it, they're like, wow. Or they have different beliefs about him, that he's anti-veteran, he's anti-cop, anti-union, anti-this, anti-that. And I said, you know what? I said, go down to the gun shop. He's there 6 days a week.
Yep.
He works a full-time job. He goes by himself. I go with him sometimes. Differing events or functions, we've always done that. And he did it when he was on council as well. And go talk to him and ask him, because he may agree to disagree with you, but he will tell you why about something as well. And people just assume everything that they're hearing out there that he's lying about it. And it's like, go talk to him. Don't take other people's word. Go talk to him directly. I mean, he's had death threats since the first day that he got in as supervisor. And, you know, I'm not concerned about that because it's out there and I'm not going to live in fear. I'm going to live in the belief the way that he stands. Transparency. Let's let people out there, the general public, even my mom, my family, like, wow, honey, I didn't know that. And it's like, it's because it doesn't get printed. It doesn't get reported. So I wish we could get more of that. What he has experienced through his 8 years on council, 12 years being there the entire time, never missing it, being informed. He educated himself in these positions so that he could be good, so he could represent the people. And he's doing the same thing as supervisor. You know, he's there. We go out to things. It doesn't matter their political party. We go to events because it's his constituents. It's our county. It's our county. All of it, no matter who you are. So I respect what he does.
That's a really good point you make, because even though there's five supervisors and they have their respective districts, that's one out of five. They make a decision. And what we'd like to do on Mountaintop Media, and folks, you can get to Mountaintop Media by simply Googling Mountaintop Media, Jefferson State of Mind, M-I-N-E, on Mountaintop Media. You can get to that. Or just Google Jefferson State of Mind, M-I-N-E. What I'd like to do is, down the road here, Wynn, we want to do is have them on.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about government, because what you just said was so true, Lori, about the way you two look at the people that live here. And like us, everybody in this room, I'm probably the newest here, and I've been here for almost 47 years. And so, raised all my kids here, all my kids were born here. So when you look at all that and see people that want to stand up without fear, you know, this is where I'd like to use an expletive, but I can't. No bull feces. Okay. So as you look at all this, Patrick, where do you believe we need to go from here? I mean, to me, I can't believe the corruption. I'll just say it. I can't believe how corrupt Leonard Modi is. It's hard for me even to believe that.
Well, and one quick thing, too, on the tail end of what Lori was saying. Patrick is the most accessible board member
we
have or ever have had.
Absolutely.
Because, like you said, he's there at the shop 6 days a week, and people can come in and they can call in, and I've been there at times where that's happened. Multiple times. Yeah, and there's just, and I'm not hanging out there every day, but every time I'm there, something's going on. People are talking to him, they're emailing him, they're calling him, they walk in the shop, there'll be a little powwow with patrons in the store. People just come in just to talk and then they leave. And some people buy stuff, whatever, but I mean, he's accessible. That's the thing. Well, he's totally accessible.
And I've heard Patrick himself say, we'll have you reached out to your supervisor
right.
in your district.
Right.
And
I've heard that
they
too.
Say, yes, we have. Or sometimes they say, no, we haven't. Patrick says, well, tell you what, reach out to them.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard him personally say that.
Yep.
Reach out to them. And, you know, and if you don't have success, go ahead, please call me back. Come back and see me.
Yeah.
So he tries to do the right thing.
Absolutely. Always. Absolutely. Yeah, I've witnessed the same thing.
You know, I the shop is very important to me. That's where I grew up as a boy, and so my whole life, that's my extended family. But it's also where people have found me my entire life. After school, and I'm talking from kindergarten on, that's where you would have found me there every day. My dad said it's never to be ashamed of good work, and so that's what I've done. The problem with the office at 1450 Court Street is that it's behind closed doors. The public can't access it.
That's true.
It's a really nice office, got a view and all that, but nobody can get to me, and so it's of no use to me. And so if it was more open, that's where I would be, but it's not. They've designed it that way on purpose. So I'm more accessible where I'm at. People can come in. They do every day. There isn't a day that goes by that I don't have two or three people.
Yeah.
And I actually prefer that because, you know, we've all experienced trying to text something, you know, and something is lost when you're trying to text complicated or technical issues. And so when someone can just simply come in and talk to you, you get a better feel for it, and you can kind of get a totally different side to someone because stuff is lost.
Well, it's the communication factor.
Right.
Text is not communication. It's just it's throwing data out, whereas when you sit across the table from somebody or just sit side by side having dialogue, the inflection in the voice, the body language, just everything that you talk about, the engagement, that is so important. So important.
Apparently, I'm so good at it, I can defeat a polygraph test.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
You know, but I have enjoyed my time, you know, and it actually has been a lot of fun. And I think the biggest reason why it's been fun, because others have said it's been a very stressful time, and I haven't really looked at it that way, in that I'm seeing more public engagement than ever before.
Right.
And it's really good. It's what we've needed. People are taking an interest as to what's happening here in Shasta County, and they're acting upon it. They're taking time out of their lives to affect some change, because literally we've let others do this for too long.
Yep.
And it has affected our county, I believe, in an adverse way. It's affected our state and our country adversely, and it's time now to take it back. And we're seeing it not only in Shasta County, but we're also seeing it in other counties and other states. Yep. We're seeing movements just like what we have here.
Absolutely.
And, you know, while I'm not a member of the Red, White, and Blueprint, I really appreciate what they're doing. They're getting information out that you're not seeing in the local media.
Right.
And of course, the media can't control that. And so they're able to print out and put out information that are 50, 60, 70,000 people are seeing each time they do, and it's spreading all over the whole nation.
Absolutely. And I know that John Age, in fact, that may be a good interview. Anomic Age, John is a friend of mine out of North Carolina, does something similar to InfoWars, to Alex Jones. A little nicer.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think that what you've done is you've started something here, and somebody told me a long time ago, things start in Redding, things start in Shasta County, and I really do believe that. And what you've started here, my friend, is a real public servant, someone who really is a statesman, who's available to the people and does what the people do. He works every day. He works 6 days a week. And you can go in and see him, and you're accessible. No one else is accessible like that. And I think that might be something. You might be starting a trend here. Maybe we can call that the Jones syndrome, huh?
Well, you know, I have, you know, no personal issues really with any of the supervisors. I judge them by their votes.
Absolutely, as we all should.
And, you know, so I don't care, you know, it's not important to me whether you were a cop or a rancher or a plumber or a painter. Those are all good professions. That's not what's important to me, and that's not how I judge you. I don't care what you do. But when you're an elected official, the votes matter. They count. And that's how I will judge you, and I'll be critical of that. And so sometimes that's a little bit lost. And so for a particular supervisor that I dislike, it's because of the votes,
right,
not the individual or what they do or have done in the past. We spend $600 million a year, and how we spend it matters.
It does.
And
it's the people's money.
Yeah.
It is truly the people's money. All the tax dollars raised, it's the people's money.
And so there's a change coming. We're seeing that. And it's happening right here in Shasta County, and I'm happy to be a part of that. And we're seeing movements. We've had just week after week, we're seeing more and more people come forward from all branches, from whether it's healthcare workers, public safety, and just private sector.
Mm-hmm.
We're about ready to see some change, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the year. And I appreciate both you, Wynn, and Terry having the program week after week. We listen in every morning. We normally are sleeping in right about this time.
Sure you are. And, so now, critters to feed. We know better.
But anyway, thank you, guys.
You bet,
thank
buddy. You. Patrick and Lori are going to be staying over for Sovereign Minds. So they're going to be staying here for a bit. You can call into Sovereign Minds at 605-4567, 605-4567. They're going to still be on. As for Wynn and I, my friend, time has come.
For 51.
Let's get it done.
Amen.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.